This is Charlotte Tux. I'm Mike Collins. Children and teens being in plays has become an almost common occurrence, especially here in Charlotte, which is home to one of the country's best children's theaters. But teens writing, composing, directing, acting in their own original musical and running the theater company producing that musical is something else. And we'll meet a few of the young people here who are doing just that later in the program. First, navigating the able-bodied world without one, that one being an able body. Think about this for a moment. Most of the world was designed and built to accommodate those of us who are able-bodied. And although the last 50 years has brought about numerous accommodations for those who are disabled, navigating this world can still be tricky, time-consuming, frustrating, and sometimes impossible for those with disabilities. So we're going to spend some time looking at our world through their eyes, specifically through the eyes of Desira Berenger. Although she was born with cerebral palsy, she's learned to navigate this world to the point that she is now a peer support specialist at Mecklenburg Promise, a community-wide collaborative of individuals in recovery from mental health challenges. She's in our studio here at Spirit Square. Welcome, Spirit Square. Welcome.
Hi, welcome everybody. I want to thank everybody from welcome me to WAFE radio station
today. Well, you're welcome, and nice to have you with us. Also with us is Dr. Margaret Quinlan, Assistant Professor in Communication Studies at UNC Charlotte. How are you? Welcome.
Great, thanks.
Let me turn your microphone on. You're in a different position than ever before. Welcome.
Great.
And Sean Hogan is Executive Director of Ocasio. That's an organization, if I understand this correctly, that promotes community building and development through art.
That's it.
Okay, well, we'll talk some more about that. And joining us by phone is Kelly Buckland, Executive Director for the National Council on Independent Living. Mr. Buckland is a person with a disability who's been actively involved in disability issues since 1979. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the program. Are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you. Nice to have you with us. Desira, you were, as I said, born with cerebral palsy. From reading through your bio, this has not been easy for you. You say you struggled through grade school and high school. And I'm just curious as to why. Was it because of your disability, or were there other factors involved as well?
It was other factors as well, but my disabilities definitely does play a part in why I struggle and why I have struggled.
But you've gone to school, and you successfully completed school?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a high school diploma. I have some education and higher level education in college. So I'm not limited. I just have a lot of frustrations.
You also talk, in your bio at least, about how you didn't have the right kind of support that would lead, as a child, that would lead someone to a productive life until you found this organization called Mecklenburg Promise. You say they allowed you to be yourself. How so?
Well, I developed a mental illness at the age of 17. So for that long period of time, I knew there was something wrong, but I just didn't know how to reach out. Mm-hmm. And one day, I came across a young lady that's the director at Make Promise, and I met with her, and she started getting me involved in things at Make Promise, and I started developing who Desira was as a human, as a person of society with a disability, mm-hmm. and I started opening up, even though I had that fear. I didn't trust people, and I still struggle with that, but it's becoming easier as I meet positive people that's willing to allow me to be myself.
You are sitting there in a wheelchair. I'm just curious how you got here this morning, because it's difficult for people who have to depend on public transportation, period. Any person who has to taking a bus in this city or elsewhere faces challenges. Did you come by bus today? Did somebody drive you today?
No, actually, I am very independent. I use my power chair. My power chair is considered my legs because I am primarily wheelchair bound. So my wheels is what I use to get around on the town. I use the links to get, or special transportation to get around on the bus this morning. So it is very timely. So when I have to be somewhere, I have to time it, you know. So just in case you have problems with the special transportation or city buses, you have to really time yourself. Mm-hmm. To get somewhere on time,
because
sometimes
it
doesn't work out.
I take it that not every bus has the ability to get you on board.
No, not every bus.
How many buses are equipped in the city to get people who are wheelchair bound on board?
I think there are all of them, but some of them are not maintenance the way that they should.
So they don't work.
Right.
Isn't that special?
Yes.
I'm just curious, Sean Hogan, who you're with this organization called Ocasio, and it deals with writing and art and expression, self-expression. How does that help somebody who has disabilities?
Well, I think it gives them a voice, you know, in a different way, you know, besides using their words. In this case, we used photography. Mm-hmm. But I think that it almost helps people like us from the outside get a better understanding of what it's like to get around the city in a wheelchair.
And Desira has been participating in this program. What has her project been?
Well, she did a project called Photo Voice, and she went in the community with a camera and started to take pictures just to show people what the world was like from her world. And what I was, surprised to see when she came back was, you know, pictures of fire hydrants in the middle of sidewalks. And I don't know, I'd never looked at it twice before. I'm sure I walked by that fire hydrant 10 times. And then I imagined, like, well, wait a minute, what's she going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And she's told me stories where she has to go on the road.
Yeah, I was going to ask when I read about this story, Desira, whether you had to seek out or travel a lot to figure out what you were going to shoot, or whether these impediments are so omnipresent that it wasn't difficult at all to find them to shoot.
Well, it's not really difficult for me to find them because I have to travel like that all the time. You know, but it's very hard for me to communicate to people what I am actually feeling or what's actually going on. Now, you wouldn't understand what it actually feels like to be in my shoes unless you're actually living in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some people think, well, oh, it's okay. She gets around just fine. She seems very happy. But sometimes I'm very frustrated.
Yeah. Kelly, you understand because, as I understand this, you were an able-bodied person until you were about, what, 8 or 9 or 10 years old, somewhere in that neighborhood, I think, maybe a little older.
And then, yeah, 16.
16, okay, and became a paraplegic at that age because of an accident. So for about 40 years now, you've been navigating the world through mobilized transportation here, I guess wheelchair transportation. Talk about being in Desira's shoes, because you've seen the world from both sides.
Well, the world is a much different place than it was when I got my disability in 1970. There's a lot. It's a lot easier to get around now than it used to be in 1970. There weren't any curb cuts. There weren't any ramps, really. There definitely were no accessible bathrooms. So if you went out, you could be guaranteed that you couldn't use the restroom in any of the restaurants or anything like that. So it is a much different place than it was in 1970, but there's still, as you can tell from the other guests, there's still a lot more to do. The view from independent living is that it's not us that are broken or need to be fixed, because we're not going to be fixed. And if you live long enough, we're all going to have a disability if you live long enough, that it's really that the world is the part that's broken, and we need to fix the world so that it accommodates people with disabilities better. And we've made a lot of progress toward that. You can see from the parking spaces and the restrooms and a lot of other things that now are in place to protect the rights of people with disabilities. But it's a much different place than it was 40 years ago.
Has this been because of benign neglect, or has it been because we just want to cut corners and save money, and the majority of the people in the world are ambulatory and don't need this extra help, and this costs money, cutting those curbs and moving fire hydrants because they're in the way? It all costs money. Is it benign neglect, or is it willful?
It's a little bit of both, I think, and it really doesn't cost any more money. If you build it the way that you should build it in the beginning and you don't have to go back and change it, it really isn't any more expensive.
Dr. Quinlan, you said that if you look at some of our sidewalks here in Charlotte, you would think that city planners believe that some people shouldn't use them, meaning, I guess, the disabled. Mm-hmm. Why haven't these sidewalks been adjusted to accommodate these people?
Well, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to address some of the patterns of isolation, some of the exclusion that many individuals with disabilities face, that we still need to continue to prioritize inclusion and integration into community life and find ways for individuals with disabilities to make space to tell their own experiences, like Desira has told us, and to be a part of that change. That, for me, what makes Desira's art project so beautiful is that she's used the artistic mindset, she's used artistic sensibilities to redress some of the inequities that exist, that artists such as Desira have had a long history of being irreverent, being catalysts for social change. So until we see those images and until they become part of our awareness, we don't know how to provide people with disabilities some of the same rights that all of us enjoy.
I know that you've done a lot of studying of the disabled in your work, and doctor, and I know, Sean, you work with folks like this, and you have this project going on at Ocasio, and I'm curious about, well, sometimes when the able-bodied people look at these art projects, they think, well, they're just therapy for those who are disabled. But in this case, that is not the case. It's to open our eyes to what their world is like, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even to come back to something you'd asked her originally was about, like, how far did you have to go? To be honest, she didn't go 10 feet outside the door of, you know, our uptown space on South Church and West Moorhead before she had three pictures right there of sidewalks that I'd never looked at twice before.
What are those pictures of?
Well, one is a telephone pole right in the middle of the sidewalk where her only option is literally to go against traffic on a one-way street on South Church unless she wants to go all the way around the entire city block. And, you know, the standards in the city say when you call in, report on 311, in 24 to 48 hours, they're going to do something to make sure that that's been fixed. They've got about 4 or 5 complaints from me.
And it hasn't been done.
Well, actually, it got fixed yesterday, which I think is quite interesting.
what is the kind of the core issue behind all of this is there are some wonderful people in Charlotte who are working towards these issues, that we have the national or the Mecklenburg Advocacy Council for People with Disabilities. We have the Disability Rights and Resources right here in Charlotte. We have an ADA coordinator, Terry Bradley, who for a long time, that was just his part-time job. Now that is his full-time job. So that shows to me that Charlotte is very committed to making these changes, to doing better, that if ADA says we want 3-foot-wide sidewalks, why not have 4, right? We are working towards that. And that some of the obstacles behind all of that is just the attitudes, the ignorance, the discrimination that can really be the serious impediments to achieving full integration, productivity, and independence for people with disabilities.
I want to come back to the ADA in the next segment because these laws have been on the books for quite a while now. And yes, they have made changes and have made life better and easier in some cases, but there's still a long way to go. And I wonder why. I wonder why the law just didn't fix everything overnight, because it's been several decades, actually, since that law was passed. In a nutshell, very quickly, what's your average day like in dealing with problems, just navigating the world, Desira?
It's every day, all day, 365 days a year. So it never ends, you know.
And it's not just the outside world. It's the inside world, isn't it?
Yes.
Because kitchen countertops are not made for people in wheelchairs.
No, sir.
Bathroom vanities are not made for people in wheelchairs.
Exactly. You know, so it's very important that we make a difference in somebody's life who can't walk, see, hear, or who needs to navigate the world in a different way. We are human beings, and we deserve to be treated with respect. You know, and that's very important to me. And if I'm going to be the one to break that stigma, I'm here for it.
Okay, we're going to come back, and you'll be here for it on the other side of the break as well. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlie Soap, makers of hypoallergenic biodegradable laundry powder, liquid, and household cleaners. Made in North Carolina, available at Fresh Market and charliesoap.com. Well, Tavis Smiley can be heard every day on public radio and television. He's also written 16 books and was recently named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world. But tomorrow, we will have the opportunity to interact with Smiley's work in a whole new way through his exhibition, America I Am, the African American imprint, which will open tomorrow at the Gantt Center and run through January. So Tavis Smiley will join us to talk about that exhibit, his work, and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Mexicans go to the polls Sunday to choose new president. How Mexico's drug war and changing economy could influence the upcoming elections, and what's at stake for the U.S.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the world faced, as navigated by those who are disabled, this world that we have set up for people who are able-bodied, with Desira Barringer, who is a volunteer with MEC Promise and who has cerebral palsy and is wheelchair-bound. Sean Hogan is executive director of Ocasio. That's a program that helps people express themselves, people with disabilities and other problems. And Dr. Margaret Quinlan is an assistant professor of communication studies at UNC Charlotte, who studies those with disabilities. And Kelly Buckland is executive director of the National Council on Independent Living. Kelly, you have a degree in social work. You've been actively involved in the legislative process used to help remove barriers to those with handicaps. And you've also been active as executive director of the Idaho State Independent Living Council to fight for equal rights and equal protection under the law for those with disabilities. How tough a struggle is that?
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of work to do. I've been working on this stuff now for over a quarter of a century. And we've, like I said before, we've made a lot of progress, but we really have a long ways to go. For instance, your discussion around the Americans with Disabilities Act, I just attended a hearing yesterday in the House to require that people with disabilities would have to give a business 120 days notice before they could file any kind of lawsuit against them.
Mm-hmm.
This is really harmful legislation, and it's getting some traction in the House, and it's really unfortunate to see that, because what that means is that businesses have been reluctant to comply anyway,
mm-hmm.
And what this would do is say that you have no obligation to comply until you receive a letter from somebody. So all the voluntary compliance that we've had from businesses and public accommodations up to this point essentially would go away, because they wouldn't need to worry about it until they got some letter notifying them that somebody was going to sue them.
And so this is moving.
They wouldn't take care of the problem until they got that letter.
So
it would really slow things down.
This is moving through the House of Representatives. Is that what you're saying?
It was in committee yesterday. It received a hearing yesterday.
Now, the ADA was signed into law in 1990, by President Bush, and it was to prohibit discrimination based on disability. You're telling me that there are significant issues with that. Why?
Well, if you can't get into a business, the effect is that you're discriminated against because of your disability.
Mm-hmm.
But why didn't the law address it? Why didn't that fix that? Why didn't that permanently
end the
problem?
The law does address it. The two, I think, major problems are, the only way it gets addressed is usually by complaint. So someone with a disability has to complain that they're being discriminated against before anybody's really obligated to do anything about it, or because until there's like a suit, there really isn't going to be any kind of a need to fix it, unless businesses are concerned about that and want to comply so that they don't get sued. So that's why this other law is so damaging, because it would essentially take that concern away until they actually received a letter from somebody. So the other thing is, there's really no damages that are allowed for that kind of discrimination either. Under most civil rights laws, you're entitled to damages if you're harmed because of discrimination. Under the ADA, you're not. So, I mean, one of the things we would like to actually see is that damages be included. But it's just, and also, it's just a long process. I mean, the world was built to not accommodate people with disabilities. So to get people to change their mindset about that is a long process. So.
How did it come about in 1990 that this law was passed, Doctor? I mean, as he said, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, the world was built to accommodate able-bodied people, and suddenly we got a conscience?
It just has to come with awareness and enough people with disabilities coming together to put this at the forefront.
People coming out of the shadows, essentially, because people with disabilities in the 1950s and 60s and 70s were invisible.
Yes, mm-hmm. And they brought forward some of these ideas of equality, some of the structures that constrain and empower people with disabilities, and they collaborated together to say need to change.
You were born this way. You were born into this world, in this body, with this condition. So you knew nothing else. You've always known this.
Yes.
What kind of discrimination have you? Do people, when you talk to them about the problems you're facing, look at you with a blank stare?
Yes.
They don't get it?
No.
They don't care or they don't get it?
It's both. You got some people that want to understand, but they just don't. And you got some people that understand, but they don't care. Because some people do this for the money, and it's not for the money. You know, if you're going to work in a field with disabled people, you got to have the heart. You got to have love.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just do something just to do it because I want to make money.
Mm. And Kelly, you were not born this way. You became a paraplegic at 16. Did that, in and of itself, the anger, the depression, whatever else you might have gone through as a result of your accident, lead you to become the activist that you are?
Well, certainly it led me to that. And I actually think having a disability has made a much better person out of me.
How so?
I was pretty insensitive, quite frankly, before I had a disability, and I think it's also enriched my life in a number of ways. There's experiences that I've had because I am a person with a disability that I would have never been able to experience had I not had a disability. So my life to me is much better because of having had a disability, just because of the enriching experiences that I've received as a result of it. And to answer your question about the ADA and how we got here, it really, in my opinion, it really was a convergence of a number of different things. In the 60s, we had the civil rights movement going on. We had Ralph Nader, who was working on consumer issues and consumerism. We also had the deinstitutionalization movement that was going on as a result of some of the stuff that was uncovered by Geraldo Herrera in New York. And all of that sort of stuff really kind of coalesced. Plus, you had a lot of people with disabilities who, frankly, were living longer, surviving stuff that they would not have survived just a decade or two earlier. And so I think all of that stuff coming together really was what shaped the disability rights movement and moved people to viewing themselves in a different light, too, that they were people, they had rights, they weren't always patients, they weren't always in a position of wanting to get charity, that kind of, they wanted to be part of the mainstream society and mainstream America. And participate in their, have participatory lives just like everybody else does. Have a job, have a family, have a life, if you will. So,
when Kelly Buckland was talking about being a better person for having his disability and for seeing the world and having experiences that he would not have had otherwise, Sean, you were nodding your head up and down, and I'm taking that that's because you work with these folks and you're through this project that Ocasio has, these art projects that are capturing the world through the eyes of disabled people. You're learning things. What are you learning?
You know, it's amazing how much Desire in this one experience has taught me. You know, and even like, you know, Dr. Quinlan had mentioned, like, one of her particular slides was of I think it was a place that didn't have a ramp or a staircase that it just said that these stairs prohibit me from parts of our community. And like, I felt it right then, you know, like it's very different to say like it's an inconvenience as to feel like I'm not wanted here, you know. So I think that, you know, it wasn't even just that because, you know, as we've learned, even, you know, ADA has made tremendous strides, you know, and it's changed things for the better. But even just still seeing things, like, again, coming back to her project, she had a series of photos where, you know, three consecutive buses in a row before she could actually get onto a bus that could take her to a destination. You know, the first ramp's broken. Second ramp was, I guess, quote unquote, broken. You know, there's
so if you have to be someplace in at a certain time, it's not going to happen.
Right.
You have to really plan around your day around transportation.
Absolutely. I'm sure you find Desire was probably up at 6 o'clock this morning to get here, and she lives right on the light rail.
how long did it take you to get here this morning, Jim?
Well, it took me like an hour, because it takes a while for me to get it together because I am disabled. So you have to take a lot of stuff in factor.
Right.
Like I said, I got to make sure that my chair is in charge. I got to make sure that it's working. I got to make sure I have stuff to go out into the community.
Right.
So it takes a lot of time to prepare someone with this disability to be out in the community and be as normal as possible.
People with disabilities still face discomfort on the parts of those who are able-bodied, even though they've made strides in coming forward and being present in the world and demanding their rights and demanding access, etc. When an able-bodied person meets somebody in a wheelchair or with some other disability, it's generally uncomfortable. Well, how should able-bodied people react to and act around those with disabilities? I want to hear from Dr. and from you, Desire.
I think a way to start is that don't assume that the person needs help, right? To treat the person as a person, not just because of their disability. That one thing that I really stress with my students is to move away from talking about a person as a disabled person to a person with a disability. That seemingly mundane shift in language shifts the way we think about disability. That disability is a part of my identity, but it's not all-encompassing. So even just the language, avoiding using degrading, outdated terms such as handicap or cripple, mm-hmm. is even a step in the right direction.
You want to chime in on that?
Yes. You know, avoid using the words retarded. Be positive. Don't try to take advantage of the person. You know, don't think of a person with a disability as money dollar signs, you know, because I get a lot of that. And that's not always so, you know, and that's where a lot of different things like abuse come in.
Do you think that things will change or certainly are going to have to change as the baby boomers age and become elderly and find themselves in these power chairs and in other situations? And as these combat veterans come back and are being reintegrated into society with horrible disabling injuries, are we going to change our viewpoint? Are we going to hasten the way we change the world?
Well, all of the changes that we're seeing with the ADA are helping everybody. So what we need to keep in mind is that those of us who are able-bodied, we're all living in temporarily able-bodied bodies, that there's the potential of any of us at any point to become a person with a disability. So making these changes is helping all of us. It's making it easier for all of us to get down the street. It's making it easier for all of us to be successful in our jobs and in our careers and in, you know, have a place in the arts and things like that. So these changes are just going to help everybody. That Charlotte has this vision of being this world-class city, and in order for that to happen, it needs to be a place where everybody feels included. People of all abilities, people of all marginalized positions need to feel included, and we need to be listening to the voices of these people and making space for that to happen.
And before I run out of time, Sean, I'm just curious about the name Ocasio, the name for your organization, which has only been in existence for about a year now.
Yeah. It's Latin for opportunity. I think that people have a lot of perceptions about the arts and, you know, what they can be used for, and, you know, we try to change that. And at the same time, you know, using things like the Photo Voice Project to help people understand the world from another perspective.
What happens to the work that Desire and other people in the project have done?
Well, it goes up onto our website. You know, we put it up, we get it out, as especially a project like with hers, you know, showing so much, you know, with the limitations of cats and the sidewalks and even the ADA standards, you know, kind of coming back to your questions about, yeah, okay, just because a building is to ADA standards, you know, I think a lot of times it almost assumes that someone is there with them to hold the door, to help them, you know, get around to the counter, to clear the chairs out of the way so that they can bring their food up to a countertop. You know, I think that That's something that someone like Desira, who lives independently, you know, is a challenge, you know. So it's tough to say, do we face the fact that there's so many places that aren't into ADA standards, or do we look at what ADA standards are and how can they be improved? And it's kind of like, I guess, both.
Are you optimistic about this? I mean, do you think this is going to happen? Or are what kind of political obstacles? I'd like to hear from Kelly about this as well, but what kind of political obstacles, Doctor, are you witnessing? Are they falling faster, or are they just as...
Well, we just had changes in the ADA in 2008, which helped for employment issues, making sure websites are accessible. So these are all steps in the right direction that we're not going to spend time anymore fighting about whether or not you have a disability. That if you have a prosthetic, you still have a disability even though you use a prosthetic. If you're on medication for your disability or if you're in cancer remission, that's still a disability. And so, you know, just even changing how we think about what is a disability is movement forward.
Hmm. Kelly?
Well, I would agree. I think the doctor's on target. I mean, we have made improvements not only the ADA, but other civil rights laws for people with disabilities, not just nationally, but in states. And as was mentioned, you know, there are organizations there like the Center for Independent Living there in Charlotte that are continuing to work on those issues on a state level as well, and that's true across the nation. However, you know, I attended that hearing yesterday that would do damage to the ADA. There's another issue going on around accessibility of pools and the hotels, having lifts or not having lifts, that is also taking place right now. And then, quite honestly, the decision that we're going to get out of the Supreme Court in about 20 minutes around the new healthcare law could have a devastating impact on people with disabilities and their ability to live independently. I mean, if the mandate that people can get health insurance, regardless of pre-existing conditions, goes away, mm-hmm. that's definitely going to have a negative impact on people with disabilities. There was also stuff in that healthcare bill that expanded home and community-based services for people so that they didn't have to either live in institutions or nursing homes. If those are struck down by the Supreme Court, we will definitely continue to have more people in institutions and nursing homes instead of living in the community with everyone else. So this is I guess the real answer to this is an ongoing struggle, and it requires a lot of time and attention to keep us on the right track.
Kelly Buckland is the expert on independent living because he's the executive director of the National Council on Independent Living. But do you live independently, Desira?
Yes, I do.
And how difficult was it for you to find a place to live that you could navigate?
It is very difficult. And it's still difficult because you have places that do not want to make accessibility possible for someone who is permanently disabled.
I mean, just for something as simple as getting a glass of water from the kitchen tap. I mean,
yes,
you have to.
It is difficult.
If you're in a wheelchair, how do you reach the faucet?
You have to come up with a plan.
It is
very difficult.
Desira Barringer, a volunteer with MEC Promise and cerebral palsy. She has cerebral palsy and is wheelchair bound. Sean Hogan, executive director at Vocasio. Dr. Margaret Quinlan, assistant professor of communication studies at UNC Charlotte. And Kelly Buckland, executive director of the National Council on Independent Living. I think you've opened some folks' eyes here this morning. Thanks for your time. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Horak Talley. For more than 75 years, representing developers and lenders in acquiring, financing, developing, and selling real estate. Horak Talley, attorneys who get things done. Mexicans go to the polls on Sunday to choose a new president and possibly a new governing party. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about Mexico's drug war, the changing economy, and how it could influence the upcoming elections and how the results will impact the United States and Mexican relations. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Young people taking on a very adult task. We'll talk to them some more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
The Supreme Court's decision on health care reform affects all of us.
The nearly $3 trillion health care system is broken.
Everybody has waiting with bated breath, that much is for sure.
Well, we know this, they'll make history.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Healthcare, what comes next? Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
And now on to young people with abilities beyond their age. As I said at the very beginning of the hour, children and teens appearing in plays is common these days. What isn't so common is teens writing, composing, directing, producing, and acting in their own worth. But that is the case with Treehouse Acting Company here in Charlotte and their new production, Cyber Soul. Here's a sample of one of the songs from that musical.
The stars are out tonight. They're miles away from me and you. And look at the moon, the moon. You told me that you'd stay, but your mind is far away from me. I'm looking for something new, but I won't find it here at the bottom of everything I have fallen.
That song deals with themes common to teens, but with a musicality that should be beyond their experience, and with words that bring a new voice, a different perspective to teen life in the modern world.
You really think you get me? You really think you understand?
It's not that I don't understand. It's just important things are on the line.
Like my future. Like how we feel.
It's not like I don't care. I know that you are hurting.
Come on,
you know I care. It's
you.
Just
you
I got these plans
okay.
Of fame and
you
fortune,
really think
and I need you more than ever. Don't push me away. You're clouded in your self-addicted mind. And you can't let go.
Well, that's Abby Corrigan and Matt Carlson. They co-wrote this original musical, Cyber Soul, along with Matt Mitchell and Colin Moore. So let's break this down here. Abby Corrigan and Matt Mitchell are co-founders of Treehouse Acting Company, which they founded to bring more complete theatrical opportunities to young people. They partner with Cast in producing their shows. Both Abby and Matt Mitchell are with us in the studio, along with Matt Carlson, who is a senior at Northwest School of the Arts, where he majors in musical theater. He's also a musician and lead singer and guitarist for the band Dangerous Daze, D-A-Z-E. And Colin Moore is a freshman at App State, studying recording and production in the music studies department. He graduated from Northwest School of the Arts, where he studied theater and playwriting. Good morning to you all.
Morning.
Morning.
Wow, all these voices here this morning. Abby and Matt Mitchell.
Yes.
Yes.
Just for people listening on the radio, Matt Mitchell is the blonde guy, and Matt Carlson is the...
It's blue.
It's blue. It is blue.
He's blue.
You know, I like blue hair. We should do more of that. Blue dark hair, not blue gray hair, which I'm heading toward. How old were you, Abby and Matt Mitchell, when you decided to start this theater company?
We were both in... Well, we kind of got the idea, I think, in fifth grade, because we went to school together at Eastover Elementary, and we were really good friends there.
And what grade are you in now?
And now
we're both going into ninth grade.
Going into ninth grade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Because I looked at your picture, Matt, and I thought, is he a teenager, really?
Yeah, those pictures are a little...
They're a little old? They're a little old? Why did you want to start this company?
Well, we really wanted to start the company because there's always been great theater opportunities here in Charlotte, both in community theater and shows that always come here for touring companies. But we really wanted to have the opportunity to have artistic control over theater. So the Treehouse Acting Company includes us doing the writing, the directing, the set design, the lighting design, choreography. So it's a really great experience for all of us.
And we do have adult mentors too.
Yes.
Do not mean any disrespect, because I've listened to the songs that you supplied us, and I know that you guys are serious about this. But as I was reading through the material yesterday, it was kind of like I'm thinking back to Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney. Hey, we got costumes in the attic, and my daddy has a barn. Let's put on a show. That's not like this, though. And to hear you talk, Matt, you're talking to me like a 30-year-old.
Thank you.
Seriously, I mean, I'm looking at your face. You're very serious about this. I'm curious about where the idea popped into your head that you wanted artistic control at your age.
Well, we were reading a script that we really liked. It was a spoof on Alice in Wonderland, that kind of play. And Abby really wanted, we all had all these ideas on how the show would go. And this was in 2010. And I had this cool idea for what the set was going to look like and what the lighting would look like. And
we had so many ideas. We had so much fun that day. We were looking on all these websites, like, what show should we do? And it was really fun.
So we decided that we would get a bunch of our friends together and put on this show, and that eventually became the Treehouse Acting Company. And
why the name Treehouse Acting Company?
Well, Treehouse Acting Company gave us the idea of having, like, young artists, like, but still very, like, serious about what they want to do.
It was, because you know how when you grow up, every kid wants a treehouse.
That's true.
It's kind of like one of those things. Yeah. And so.
I recall that vaguely. Now, you're a musician, Matt Carlson.
Yes.
But you're also an actor?
Yes, sir.
And you're majoring in musical theater?
I am.
You have a wonderful voice, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let's show to you, Abby.
Thank you.
I've only heard the two of you sing. But acting and actors and musicians are very different breeds
of
people.
They are.
Yes, they
animals.
Oh, yes.
So how do you put those two things together? And I'll bring you into this too, Colin, because you're the music director of this,
yes,
and
I
you're
am.
Involved with these theater people. So, well, I mean, how do musicians and actors coexist peacefully?
Theater is my other love. I majored in theater when I went to Northwest School of the Arts, so it's not really too hard to bridge that gap. Although we're different breeds, we are cut from similar cloths in terms of how we like to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. And
see, the difference is that musicians get paid.
Yeah. Sometimes.
But seriously, it seems to me that a musician's approach is very methodical and analytical. And it's just, let's play the music the way it's written and put some expression into it. Actors want to explore and emote and find things in the text that may or may not be there. So you're on both, you have feet in both camps, both of you do.
Well, what's funny is that I do the same thing for both. I write the music, and then it's, you know, what does this line mean and what can it mean? Can I sing it in any different way?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with this show, too. We wrote the words, we wrote the music, and then the emotion came. And then different emotions came, especially when we brought the cast into it.
Let's talk about this for a second, because you've done a couple of productions in the past. They were straight plays, though, weren't they? They weren't musicals.
We've never done a musical.
Were they original plays?
No.
So this is not only your first musical, it is an original musical.
Yes.
Having been involved in producing an original musical review for several years in a row, I know how hard that is. I mean, it's monstrously difficult, and there's so many decisions.
It's hard.
There's so many decisions that have to be made, and you have to cut your baby to shreds sometimes to make it work.
Yeah.
So what was the process of putting this together? Why did you decide that an original musical, as opposed to staging something that's been done before, was the way to go, and what was the process of doing it?
Well, we had Matt come to us.
Matt Carlson.
At the beginning of...
last school year.
Yeah, last school year when we were in eighth grade and he was a senior. And he came to us with this idea because he had heard about Treehouse Acting Company. Mm-hmm. And so he said, oh, hey, I have this idea for a show. And so we got together and we talked about it. Mm-hmm. And they were like,
well, we're interested, but, you know, can you send us a rough draft of the script? And so we did. And
so you wrote the script as well as the as
no,
the music?
He wrote
a rough draft of the plot line.
So he wrote out all the characters and basically how the show would go. And so we got together and we said, me and Matt talked and we were like, oh, hey, what if this is our next Treehouse show if we all wrote this together? And so me, Matt Carlson, and Matt Mitchell all got together and we started writing.
And during that process, we decided we needed another person to help us with the music since Matt Carlson was the only musician, so we contacted Colin Moore, and he's been a great help throughout this entire
process. He's also advised us on several different playwriting things as well. He's a brilliant playwright.
He's amazing. I mean, his shows, he's written so many shows at Northwest, and I've gone to see almost every one.
They're great.
I know you want to jump in here, Colin.
So, yeah, I get a call in November of last year, I think it was, maybe even earlier, that's just saying, oh, hey, do you want to help write a musical? And I was like, I guess so. It's also something that I've never done before. I think it was a new journey for all of us. But coming down, I wrote the first song in November, I think it was, over Thanksgiving. And then we've just been writing songs ever since and bouncing ideas off of each other. It's been very collaborative.
Yes. Yeah. It's crazy, too, because sometimes Colin couldn't come down from App. He'd still be at App, so we would Skype call him via, was it your
iPad?
Abby's iPad.
Isn't that what this show is about? I didn't have a chance to read the script, but Cyber Soul is about technology.
Oh, yeah.
Human interface with technology and what it's doing to humans as a result of give me a thumbnail of what this is about.
Cyber Soul is basically about how, you know, now it's everything that's new. All of these kids have the new
instant
iPhone. Everybody has it almost when it comes out, you know, that kind of thing. And we're all plugged in and we're all in our phones all the time.
And we're all wired.
We all know what's going on. You know, did you see that show last night? Oh yeah, I watched it on my phone while we were in the car because I had 3G.
And it involves different people with different relationships and how those relationships are how technology interacts in that relationship, like how in a world dominated by technology and by so many other things, like in a world we live in today, how people can still relate to each other.
Issues of
and how it's hard to relate to each other sometimes when the only thing that people know is, their phones.
Yeah, and who wants to talk to somebody when you can text them?
Exactly.
Even though they're standing right next to you.
I hardly call people. I mean, I try to call people, but it's...
Yeah, this is not on topic, but I have to ask.
Yes.
What is it with you young people? You don't know how to use the phone to talk on. You only text on it.
I don't know.
What's up
There's
with
a phone
that?
On this thing?
Like, one of the... We can actually talk on our...
Who would want
what?
To?
On
All
our
right,
texting
Before
devices?
We run out of time, you brought the instruments, and I know that you're prepared to do another number from this musical, which opens tonight, by the way.
Yes.
It does. Very excited.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. We're really excited.
I think we are.
But we're gonna let you play something from this musical and tell us what you're gonna sing.
We're singing Infinity.
Infinity, and where does the song fit in the show? What's it about?
This song is close to the end of the show. It is about how these kids have dealt with this loss that happens in the show and how they deal with it, and also
personally
hoping for the future. You know that it's gonna be a good future for all these kids that are.
It's an introspective ensemble song.
Yeah.
And who's responsible for what we're about to hear?
Actually, Abby Corrigan.
Abby Corrigan wrote the music, and we helped arrange it for her, and it's really nice.
Yeah. One of my favorite numbers in the show,
actually. I brought this to them. It was late on the writing
process because there's a scene in the show that I always thought needed a song. And then Abby played the song one time, and I was like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And then they helped us arrange it, and it was great.
So okay.
Also, before we get going, I really quickly want to thank cast, Michael Simmons, Mike Corrigan, Mitzi Corrigan.
All of our mentors.
Dennis Delamar,
Jill Blady, Andrew Carr.
Our beautiful cast, our wonderful tech crew.
Our parents.
And
Jay Thomas helped us with the projections.
Jay. Yes. Can't
yeah, we have a bunch of tech.
We're going to run out of time if you don't do this number.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, okay. Stars are out tonight, the light reflects in your eyes, find me. You're so colorful, you inspire me to make something beautiful.
You light my world when it's gray. Make me dance like it's okay. know, you know, you know, you make me smile. Stay for a little while. So stay with me, yeah.
Cyber Soul opens tonight, runs through July 1st at Cast Noda. Abby Corrigan, Matt Mitchell, Matt Carlson, Colin Moore.
I will need you forever from coast to coast.